Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosi.
Film lovers, welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sosi. The show is available as a podcast, and it's also available on iTunes. And we have a lot to cover today, and whenever we have an hour chock full of various subjects, I like to bring in heavy hitters, and I brought one, a hitter who is so heavy, she has her own intro. Here we go.
Moneypenny. What gives?
Me, given an ounce of encouragement. You never take me to dinner looking like this, James. You never take me to dinner, period.
I would, you know. Only Anne would have me court-martialed for illegal use of government property.
Flattery will get you nowhere. But don't stop trying.
I've never been to Istanbul.
You've never been to Istanbul?
No.
Where the moonlight on the Bosphorus is irresistible.
Maybe I should get you to take me there someday. I've tried everything else.
Darling Moneypenny, you know I never even look at another woman.
Oh, really, James?
Mm-hmm. Let me tell you the secret of the world. Now, what do you know about gold, Moneypenny?
Oh, the only gold I know about is the kind you wear. You know, on the third finger of your left hand.
Hmm. Well, one of these days, we really must look into that.
Well, what about tonight? You come around for dinner, and I'll cook you a beautiful angel cake.
Well, nothing would give me greater pleasure, but unfortunately, I do have a business appointment.
That's the flimsiest excuse you've ever given me. Ah, well, some girls have all the luck. Who is she, James?
She is me, Miss Moneypenny.
And kindly omit the customary byplay with 007. He's dining with me, and
I don't want him to be late.
So there's hope for me yet.
Moneypenny, won't you ever believe me?
In you go, sir.
Thank you, ma'am.
Oh, by the way, how was the girl?
Which girl?
The Chinese one we fixed you up with.
Oh, another 5 minutes that I found out.
She'll never know what she missed.
Miss Moneypenny, give 007 the password we've agreed with Japanese SIS.
Yes, sir. We tried to think of something that you wouldn't forget.
Yes.
I love you. Repeat it, please, to make sure you get it.
Don't worry. I get it.
Your passport is quite in order.
Well, anyone seeing you in that outfit, Moneypenny, would most certainly be discouraged from leaving the country. What can I bring you back from Holland?
A diamond? In a ring?
Would you settle for a tulip?
Yes.
Taffeta V's in the house. Hello there.
Hello. How are you?
Oh, it's fun. It's
it
always
is
fun when you're here.
Well, it is fun, and I love that you've always called me Moneypenny, and that now I have my own intro for it. That's
yes,
deeply flattering.
Yes, so that's just I could probably do a whole show of Moneypenny Bond banter, but we haven't gotten to that show just yet.
Well, I remember that being the first thing we bonded over back in the bookstore days.
Yes, yes,
of our shared love of Lois Maxwell.
So that's right, and there's no disrespect toward Caroline Bliss or Samantha Bond or Naomi Harris. Everybody has their favorite, and we're Team Lois.
That's
so
right.
There is that.
Team Lois.
Now that I'm thinking, actually listening to that again, How much fun is M at dinner?
Not a lot, right?
A lot of rare meat, a lot of stewed potatoes,
boiled everything,
a lot of sherry and port and red wine, and no conversation.
Yeah,
no talk of matches.
You just
or
hear
anything.
The clinking of the silverware on the plate.
Makes Xanadu look like a Dorothy Parker.
Yeah. Nice.
See, this is your pledge dollars at work, the high-end stuff
right
here.
Yeah.
So, and we have a lot to cover today. And in lieu of timing, and sometimes, we'll have everything from The Great American Read. We're going to talk about Tab Hunter and some other stuff that's coming up. But I do want to mention there's a opening in theaters this week. Dwayne Johnson has his Towering Inferno, Die Hard mashup. So good for him. I have not seen this. You can read reviews of Skyscraper by some of my colleagues over here at the Film Yap and Midwest Film Journal, and I'm really happy that first off we don't have to call him The Rock. He is Dwayne Johnson.
Right.
Good for him. He's earned that. He is a bankable movie star. Good for him on that. Get the big checks while you still can. I'm not going to get into the political stuff because kind of like a movie until I see a poster or a trailer. I'm not going to buy into it. I will say this. There's the is it a fake rivalry or not between him and Vin Diesel? Vin Diesel has one thing going for him that Dwayne has not done yet. Vin Diesel got to do a film directed by the late great Sidney Lumet called Find Me Guilty, which I think is Vin Diesel's best work. He plays an informant who winds up pointing the finger at his old bosses and represents himself in court.
What?
It is an underrated crime drama, courtroom drama, from Sidney Lumet later in his life, also featuring Peter Dinklage, Annabella Sciorra, and a few others. But it was the fact that here's a guy who takes direction. And it's not saying that Mr. Johnson does not take direction, but he's working with a seasoned, famous director.
Sidney Lumet is one of my favorite directors of all time.
One is mine. So is mine. So, yeah,
wow.
you have to check into this.
I can't believe I haven't seen
early,
it.
Early aughts, if I remember.
I'm
actually, let's
that
check
down.
Into
what
that.
Was that called?
Find Me Guilty.
All right. I always get the best new recommendations.
I'm sorry, 2006.
All right.
So, and Lumet is known for his courtroom dramas like The Verdict, like 12 Angry Men, obviously his first, Night Falls on Manhattan. But yeah, this is a really underrated film and it wasn't seen a whole lot. So anyway, but I'm waiting for Dwayne Johnson to have his kind of smaller, lower budget.
To work with a good director.
Drama.
To be a real actor.
Yeah, something like that.
Not
so,
just muscles.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. I know some.
Hey, man.
Do you enjoy looking at Dwayne?
It's not my style.
Too big? Too Steve Reeves?
I'm a... to be honest, my crushes run to Jack Black and Penn Jillette. I have a
and
type.
And salt and pepper NPR types.
Well, that's true. Absolutely.
Yes, this is... Yeah, I know. We also do Nick and Nora in our spare time, so we get a dog and martinis and solve murders.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
So anyway, but Skyscraper's opening... So, but yeah, it looks different than Rampage, maybe. But that is out there. But the one I'm really excited about, and this is the follow up. Finally, it's been I think 8 years for the writer and director of Winter's Bone.
Oh.
Her follow up is called Leave No Trace, and it stars Ben Foster. Good to see Ben in this. I have to correct myself because I'm not the greatest. I'm sorry. Deborah Granick. Sorry.
Okay.
This is her follow up to Winter's Bone. I needed to write it. She also co-wrote the screenplay, but it stars Ben Foster and Thomasin McKenzie as father and daughter who have been living in a public park outside of Portland for several years. And what happens when they get caught? And they are not thrown in jail, but they're thrown by public services, social services. They wind up having to stay in a home of another gentleman and wind up doing work for him. So the point, what we see is some lovely, lovely chemistry between McKenzie and Foster's character. It is father-daughter, but it's also partners. You see the good big chunk of the first half hour or so is watching them live in the wild, coming in, walking in the town every now and then for provisions, but really living outdoors. And as the film goes on, we find out that even though they have been given a home and clothes and he has a job and they wind up attending church, it's more suffocating than it was living out into the wild. It's something, and then, you know, not everybody can do that, but we see right away that these two are capable of it. The other part that happens is, well, she's 13, and she, you know, as I've learned firsthand, teenagers start to develop their own opinions and ideas, and they start to get stronger, much stronger.
Go figure.
So, it's while Winter's Bone was kind of your cold Ozark noir, and this is also another beautiful use of outdoor photography, very natural lighting, very natural light. But it's a warmer story. Really, like I said, really nice. It's almost, I first started thinking of Atticus and Scout as far as that. It's not, you know, dad's up here, child's down here.
Right.
It's more of an equal share. And, It's a really, really lovely film. Yeah, exactly. And when you have an actor like Ben Foster, there's moments where, and we find out more about his character, that he fought in the war. He's got PTSD, obviously authority issues. But because of Foster's reputation and the films that we've seen him do before, you're kind of waiting for something to blow up. And much of the film's credit, it does not do that. It doesn't turn into the first blood. I kept waiting for that to happen, and I was pleasantly surprised, and it's not really a spoiler, that it does not happen. So it's a lovely smaller picture that's being released in the summer. I think kudos, and you know, you need an alternative to the summer blockbuster stuff. I hope folks check this out. I hope folks remember it by the end of the year. I was sidestep a little bit. I was talking with some of the other critics about the first half of this year cinematically has been pretty strong.
Yeah,
I think
so too.
Most of the time we think of, you know, the heavy hitting films, the stuff that's going to wind up at the end of the year is your November, Decembers, and those will be a coming. But if we can find quality stuff, and especially in the independent film department in the first half of the year, and we have films like, some of my favorites so far this year include First Reformed, On Chesil Beach, Beast, The Rider, Lean on Pete, which is now out on DVD and Blu-ray this week, Leave No Trace, the latest film version of The Seagull, which was a lot of fun. And so anyway, it's been a really strong first half of the year. So go check out Leave No Trace. Thanks. Now, also in a limited release, this is not getting an Indianapolis release for some reason, but it is playing up in Fort Wayne, and we'll see if there's a larger opening for this. But it's a film from director Susanna White called Woman Walks Ahead. And this is set in 1890s. It's a Western starring Jessica Chastain as a widow who the only thing she really wants to do is head west and paint a portrait of Sitting Bull. Now, this is, I believe it's based on a true story because there's some history that happens because it's the 1890s.
Yeah.
But she winds up traveling west, and we find out that anybody going west of Omaha and is female, we don't know what's going on. So she's this kind of determined widow that she no longer has to deal with her father. She no longer has to deal with the husband. So she is an independent painter who is starting to go out of her element of New York City and going out into the open wild. She winds up getting some culture clash with Sam Rockwell, who is a gentleman who works for the War Department. They are trying to change they're currently getting ready to vote on reducing provisions to the tribes out west. So Kieran Hines is also in this picture as a gentleman married to a Native American woman, but authoritative figure and doesn't want the New York libs visiting his neck of the woods. The film is, it looks great, really nice outdoor footage. And we get the kind of, you get the two people, I think of last year's film, Victoria and Abdul, where you have two different social circles working together, and that is the case with the Chastain character and Sitting Bull. When we meet Sitting Bull, he is now reduced to, by his own choice, being a potato farmer as opposed to a leader. And she winds up egging him and getting him back into that. So there's a little kind of cry freedom, like, okay, a white person has to help a person of color to...
Yeah, little sick of white savior stuff myself.
Little bit. Even if you're a magical white person is Jessica Chastain. But there is a good chemistry amongst those two, and a little heavy-handed at the end. But if you're into and Chastain's always solid, even if maybe the material is not.
Absolutely, yeah.
So if you I would say come for the performances and suffer through some of the flaws of Woman Walks Ahead, and that's really it this weekend. There's another film opening this week, but it's at the drive-in, so we'll get to that. Well, no, it's also opening at theaters. At the Tibbs drive-in, I can't remember. Did I ask you the drive-in question the last time you were here?
What's the drive-in
question? When was the last drive-in movie you went to?
Ooh, gosh. Can't even remember. I was a kid, probably.
Okay.
It's terrible, I know, but I've spent my adult life in Seattle, and there just weren't so many there weren't really a lot.
More or less than in Indiana.
Less, yeah.
Less, really?
Yeah, we didn't.
A lot of
I
woods
don't even
out there.
Remember. Yeah.
Okay.
Seeing one.
Well,
so.
At the Tibbs Drive-In, on screen one, you have Hotel Transylvania 3.
Huh.
That opened this weekend with The Incredibles 2. Screen two, Ant-Man and the Wasp. Also a fun Marvel picture. Emma has now, I give you a status. I took my daughter to see this. Paul Rudd is now in the Patrick Dempsey League for Emma. She's very excited
about
that.
Well, she's correct.
Yeah,
yes.
Last thing she saw him in was Anchorman 2, and that's not a real judge of Mr. Rudd's looks.
Oh, I don't know. I kind of liked that mustache
him. Yes. Thank you, Sex Panther.
Sorry.
But I think she's more used to, I think, Clueless and Friends era Paul Rudd. Sorry, we go off on tangents sometimes when we think about actors.
It's true.
Ant-Man and the Wasp and Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, Bryce Wear Flats. Screen 3, Skyscraper, and The First Purge. Okay. And Screen 4, Uncle Drew and Sicario. Dave's. So you want the kids to
That's
fall
not
asleep.
A double feature.
That's
is
a
it?
Double feature.
Okay, that's very odd pairing.
I'm like same studio, that is, or one for the kids and one for the
grumps, once they fall asleep and
who's
the
gonna
grown-ups?
See the old basketball movie with
Sicario
the against the cartel movies that doesn't have Emily Blunt. Okay, that's at the Tibbs. Over at the Skyline, we have Hotel Transylvania 3 and Jurassic World. So that's happening over there. Just a reminder, as a part of the Summer Night Film Series at the venue, New Fields. I'm still working on that, ladies and gentlemen. I will try not to refer to it as the building formerly known as the IMA. But at New Fields, mark your calendars, on July 20th, being shown there, and actually tonight, if you're listening to this on Saturday, July 14th, Aquila and the Bee. Next Friday is not Hawaiian Shirt Day, but on July 20th, An American Werewolf in London.
Oh, I love that movie!
One of the early groundbreakers for mixing horror and comedy.
Absolutely.
Chris Lloyd and I were talking about that a little bit earlier. Chris did a wonderful column last week in the Film Yap. He has a Reeling Back film series, and last week he... declared his love for the 1972 zombie film Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things.
Dead Things. Oh no, that's a great movie.
Yes. So he was.
You should not be ashamed.
No.
That. It's excellent.
He does not. He knows. I love Blackula. I love all blaxploitation and blaxploitation horror. So no, I know, exactly know where
Bring
he's
it
coming
on,
from.
Yes.
He thinks that's where the horror comedy that we know of today starts. I countered with the Roger Corman stuff, but I think it's probably more shticky than. Right?
I can see the evolution. It's hard to pinpoint a first
to build. It's hard
moment.
To build that bridge, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So and this is before Freddy Krueger started to do stand up by the second or third film. Anyway, so American Werewolf in London on
That's
the 20th,
a good time.
July 27th. Selections from the Indie Shorts International Film Festival presented by Heartland Film. I'm reading off a screen. From July 26th to 29th, Newfields is hosting the first Indie Shorts International by Heartland Film. The Oscar-nominated short films to be shown include Garden Party, The Silent Child, La Femme Le TGV, Sing, and Watu Wote, All of Us. August 3rd is Hitch. August 10th, Pretty in Pink. August 11th, The Blair Witch Project. Okay. Oh, August 17th, Strangers on a Train.
Oh, yes. Pop that kid's balloon.
That's a single entendre. That's a literal.
Oh, yeah. No, it absolutely is literal. I love Farley Granger in that so much. So good.
Everyone's favorite cinematic golf bro. Mm-hmm. Tennis bro. And then August 24th, The Dark Knight, and August 31st, When Harry Met Sally. So that's all. This is the Summer Night Film Series over there. Okay. New on DVD and Blu-ray. There are times, ladies and gentlemen, where sometimes I will miss a film when it's in theaters, and I will rent it and check it out. And I've always said, and push, say what you will about your home entertainments and your technology and your darn kids. There's still nothing like seeing a film in a theater. The theater is a gathering place. You hope that technology and noise and rudeness goes away when you go to a theater every night. And some nights it is a crapshoot. But it's still, I think, the best way to go.
Shared experience.
So that's part of the reason why we see stuff. And this was one, I watched it, and even though I really enjoyed it in my living room, I still have a slight bit of regret for not seeing this in the theater. I finally saw A Quiet Place. John Krasinski, who directed and starred in it with his wife, Emily Blunt. Way to go, John. And a film that I think will be remembered in the sound categories at this year's Academy Awards. A family, of course, living in not so distant future of if sounds are made, sound monsters come and get you. That's the gist of it.
Yeah.
And it's one of the more tense films to come out this year. A lot of fun. Yeah. So, but it was one of those I would love to hear, because I've heard stories of, when some of the critics have seen it and others, that the wonder of this film was even your loudest popcorn chompers and gabbers were actually shutting up and paying attention.
Right.
So,
right. Mr. Teller taught us that silence really commands attention.
In fact, since you dropped his name, the Socies got to see his co-directing job of Macbeth Chicago Shakes. It was very cool.
That is wonderful.
Really
I'm
good,
jealous.
Really good use. We're now in stage sociology.
Sorry.
But no, it's fine. But, a lot of, at the very beginning, you have Lady M with her stillborn, and then the weird sisters all surround her, and then we don't see it because of the surrounding. And they use this trick a few times of everybody's kind of crowded up, and she disappears, and Macbeth emerges in her place. There's that. There is a mirror which has the an illusion of the dagger floating, so it doesn't have the Ed Wood strings, that sort of thing. The ghosts that show up at the dinner party. I mean, it's really, really well done. And then when Lady M is in her can't wipe it off, and she's in a white nightgown, and as she rubs her hands, you don't see the squibs, and it just, blood all
Fantastic.
Over the white dress. And then there's a great moment where all of the stage lights on stage go red, and I leaned to Emma and went, "It's Carrie at the prom." It has that kind of homage to it. So,
I love it.
Yeah, it was
Give me some good old-fashioned stagecraft. I mean,
that's what they did.
That's great.
So that is playing. So anyway, A Quiet Place is playing on video. Lean on Pete, a grown-up man and a boy in his horror story that if Flicko was written by Charles Dickens, that's kind of Lean on Pete. So hopefully you can check that out. And Criterion, this is cool. I will have to get this. Because throughout the month, if you go to a certain bookstore, it's not the one you used to work at.
It doesn't exist anymore.
The one that does exist rhymes with Obel.
Charms and Global.
Charms and Global, right. you can get Criterion disc for 50% off.
Which is a great deal.
That's a really good deal.
Yeah.
Well,
that's how I got all the Kurosawa stuff.
Well, Criterion has announced that later this year, not a part of the sale, later this year, they're going to celebrate the 100th anniversary of Ingmar Bergman. They're going to put out a Bergman box set.
Filmstruck has the Bergman stuff now in honor. Yeah.
Well, also coming out on Criterion this week, Bull Durham. I've been meaning to show my daughter that. So.
It's worth a look at.
It is. It's a romantic comedy wrapped up in what looks like a sports movie.
Right.
And the less you think about Tim Robbins' pitching abilities, the better. If you could do the cinematic baseball team, you also put in Anthony Perkins and Fear Strikes Out.
Yeah.
Little
I'm not
harsh.
Even a sports
but
gal,
you can,
but
you
I
can
understand.
Tell you're like,
yeah.
That doesn't look right.
That can't be right.
That's a little no. So anyway, those are out on DVD and Blu-ray. So shifting gears a little bit, Taffa DeVee is hanging out with me. Always a pleasure to have her here.
Always a pleasure to be here.
You are, I appointed you Costume Diva. So you have to have a title here at Film Sociology.
Excellent. I like that Diva's in my title. My goodness.
Well, there is that. However, it goes against my grain because normally, and I did this because I did this, my wife and I co-directed a theater camp for 10 years. If a child refers to themselves as a diva or a drama queen, that's kind of a euphemism for you're a big baby.
Yeah. So yeah, you're a brat.
So yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's a good one. But that is not the case here. So I am trying to.
I would never self-describe as diva.
No, because I'm like I'm the old person. I'm like, are you involved in opera? You're not allowed to have that title.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
Get a dictionary, folks. Anyway. Would you please let us in on some of your favorite costume designers from back in the day, not named Edith Head?
Oh, gosh, darn it.
Because I think, and yes, we love Edna from The Incredibles, but I think that's the one name. I mean, even people who don't know anything about, people who don't say for the closing credits, people who don't know, a best boy from a gaffer, and that sort of thing, they know, a lot of people will know the name Edith Head because she's done the big chunk of the classic films.
She really did. Yeah. And she did all of Hitchcock's movies.
Right.
And she had more Academy Awards than anyone else.
Right.
And she really was...
She's laughing at Meryl Streep from The Grave.
She is. It's, she kind of created the idea of costume designer as partner to storytelling and having the research and the understanding of how garmentry communicates about a character and supports the director and the actor.
As opposed to just going and grabbing
Correct.
Something that sort of fits. Put her on her.
Correct.
Put it on her.
And then, in addition, she influenced style in the general populace and designers, and there was some controversy because some designers considered her to just simply rob their designs, Dior, and use them to her own end. I think that could be argued. But she became a figure that was also much beloved because something that I've taken to heart as a costume designer is she supported the actors as well and would find out what they were self-conscious about and help them get through that. And the classic example, of course, is Audrey Hepburn in... Breakfast at Tiffany's. Audrey Hepburn was self-conscious about being so thin. She did not like her collarbones.
The next show, yeah.
And so that boat neck dress covered that and made her more confident, that sort of thing. She also kept her mouth shut because if you tell tales out of school, because you know everything about everybody, you know that Betty Davis refuses to wear a bra. You know, it's true.
Yes.
Betty never wore support. Pure force of will.
The only support she had was in her gown with pockets, and that was gin and smokes.
That's right, and that's all she needed. She is my favorite, and that's why I've gone on a tangent about my love of her. But I think there's actually a great documentary, and I can't recall what streaming service it's on. Please forgive me.
So
about Ori Kelly.
Okay.
And that is spelled just like it sounds, Ori Kelly, who was another great designer, also known for really influencing fashion and using kind of high fashion within the context of films. And I think that if you are unfamiliar with costumes in film, in classic film, definitely check out Ori Kelly and you will find yourself saying, oh, that one? Oh, that one? You will recognize more than you think.
Could you give some examples?
Oh, gosh, off the top of my head. See,
I know.
I freeze sometimes.
No,
deer in
you're
headlights.
Fine, you're fine. Ori Kelly.
Ori Kelly. it's a great documentary. And currently, I'm very fond of the woman, what is her name? Is it Ruth E. Carter? Who did Black Panther. Her Afrofuturism was remarkable.
I was going to ask you, I think that's a front runner now for best costume design.
It better be.
And I know, because there are times, I think, if it looks the busiest... Or and because there's a balance of that. There's something that looks really extravagant or really creative. I remember my father. I don't know my father and I was watching the Academy Awards, and my dad made fun. I think it was Chariots of Fire. Mm-hmm. I can't remember if it was Chariots of Fire or Gandhi, but it was one of those that really shorts or just a sheet.
Because it's accurate,
right?
You know,
but I think. It seems like the busier or more elaborate it sounds, it seems like the, like Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Oh, well, that's terrific. Yeah, that's a great example. I think that oftentimes the awards actually go to what I personally find rather dull, which is historic. It's a big fancy dress. Oh,
sure.
Look, it's a big fancy dress.
So a film that like a modern film couldn't it would not have a shot.
Usually, it goes to period pieces. You will find that often. But I am hopeful about Black Panther because not only did her costume support the world building that was created within that universe, but she did both historical and cultural investigation that was supported with this sort of slightly sci-fi bent to it, you know, this and she terms it Afrofuturism, which I think is exactly wonderful and perfect. It looked like $1 million. It looked right and reasonable on the screen for those characters, which is great. And it's absolutely indelible. You see it and you know those pieces in your head.
And I'm sure there are boutiques globally that have now put out a
The
Black
gentleman
Panther line.
Who created one of the silk scarves that was worn in it was just sort of a young designer, and all of a sudden he blew up and couldn't even get the factory in Italy to make them fast enough. And I love hearing stories like that. Yeah.
Okay, Ari Kelly. Sorry, gang.
We were doing a little good. Let's go back.
Okay, here we go. So his designs were also seen in films Universal, RKO, 20th Century. He won 3 Academy Awards for Best Costume Design for An American in Paris, Lay Girls, and Some Like It Hot.
Oh.
And was nominated for a 4th for Gypsy.
Sure.
Yeah.
I love a musical.
Worked on many films now considered classics, including 42nd Street, The Maltese Falcon, Casablanca, Arsenic and Old Lace, Harvey. Oh, okay, you made a face on Arsenic. Tell us about the costumes of Arsenic and Old Lace.
Oh, well, they're great because you have these two sort of dotty old ladies in their dotty old lady outfits, and then you contrast that with the impeccably handsome Cary Grant.
Oh, yes.
And it's really kind of delightful with his sharp cut things, and then they're sort of old-fashioned. And let's see, what year was that movie made?
44.
Oh, forgive me, 44. So you have to imagine that old ladies in 1944 were wearing things that were old-fashioned, and so you get some really terrific old-school fluffy, lacy, doily kinds of things. And yet they murder people, and it's completely delightful. Yeah.
By the way, both ladies, both of them, 9 years younger than Cary Grant. No, I'm kidding. That's
no,
a bit.
That's
a regular
yes.
bit.
Don't
Hello,
listen to
North
him,
by
people.
Northwest. Yeah. Harvey, Oklahoma, Auntie Mame. Let's see. So, yeah. So, those are the ones he's known for.
Yeah.
And then there's a Gillian Armstrong documentary called Women He's Undressed. That's the picture,
yeah.
I think. So, oh, my gosh. Now I have the whole list. Thank you, Wikipedia. I'm not rattling all these off. This is a
no.
lot.
But he was an influential designer and somebody who is not Edith Head. Absolutely.
Good.
He's terrific. And it's a delightful documentary to check out as well.
So there you go. So see, education. This is your pledge dollars at work right here. Okay. We are going to shift gears once again. So if you go on to PBS or WFYI.org, we have a campaign going called The Great American Read. And what has happened, there was a poll taken amongst authors and listeners and regular folk, and they have put out a list of 100 book titles.
Yep.
And then you are supposed to vote and I guess choose your favorite book. So like lists, like, you know, when there is a list, there is, of course, areas where you can point out and say that's great. And then other areas you can look, point at the list and go, never.
What are you thinking?
Yeah. And, well, I guess this is that portion of the show.
Yeah.
And I've been asked by folks here in the building I did it a little bit on Curious Mix, but about some of the page to stage adaptations of some of these films or some of these books. Sorry. All right. I'm going to get my snarkiness out of the way. No Elmore Leonard, no Walter Mosley, no Mickey Spillane, no.
There were some considerable gaps.
No Jim Thompson,
here.
No Dashiell Hammett.
Right?
Okay.
See, I feel you. Okay. And then there's Twilight on there.
And 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, forget it.
I get that you're trying to cover the gambit of literature.
Okay. I'm sorry. I love that we're talking about this, though, because we originally met in the book world and bonded over film stuff. So this is sort of perfect.
So I guess from a book standpoint, my dear, what are some of your favorites on this list?
Some of my favorites that were books. Oh, my gosh. A Prayer for Owen Meany. What a wonderful, wonderful book. And yet, what a garbage adaptation. The book made me cry because I was attached to the characters, and that garbage adaptation made me cry because
it
was garbage.
I love your loud whisper of garbage.
I'm sorry.
No, that's great.
That one, very mixed feelings because the text is one thing and yet the film, which, what was the title of that? It was a different title.
I will find out.
That's all right. I do not recall. I am old, so you must forgive me.
Oh, stop. If you're old, I'm ancient.
Well, we are all ancient ruins.
Wow.
Let's see. 1984, of course, I love that book. More prescient than ever.
You mean
ever.
The documentary?
Yeah, the documentary of our life now. But I loved the movie adaptation that came out in 1984 as well.
Richard Burton's last films.
I know,
Michael Radford directed that.
And there was much controversy over that Eurythmics soundtrack that was used in it, which I didn't know until much later.
Yeah, A Prayer for Owen Meany apparently doesn't do much on the marquee, so they renamed the film. They called the film Simon Birch.
Garbage. we can be honest here, correct?
Yes.
And Alice in Wonderland is a very important book for me personally. I love it so much. I've reread it every year forever.
That's the book that does not have breakdancing Johnny Depp.
That's correct. I really, really, even though I am an old goth lady, I hated the Tim Burton version. Although I did think that Mia, I'm going to mispronounce her last name, Wasik. Kauska?
Gesundheit.
Forgive.
She's good.
She was excellent, but the movie I did not like.
Well, and that's one of those, and there's a number of books in here that, like PBS or BBC, every decade, every generation tends to make their own version of it. I remember there was a TV movie version in the 80s, and there was a British version, film version in the 60s.
There's a 1915 version
that
is the creepiest, most delightful film. And you can see it on YouTube.
Closer in tone?
Yes, absolutely, because it keeps the darkness and the strangeness of it without amping up any sort of cutesy factor. And, of course, it's silent, so, you know, it's really very good.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's see. Dune. Again, please refer to the John Irving book, Prayer for Owen Meany. Book, great. Film, garbage.
What about the cable? They did a cable miniseries.
Oh, I didn't see that.
There's one with William Hurt. Yeah, you have to look into that.
I will look into
that.
That's
always one that's always being discussed that they're going to reboot. I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, that's rough. Okay, and then here's one, because we're going alphabetically, that I have to throw in here.
Okay.
Flowers in the Attic by V.C. Andrews. Here's the thing. I always wanted to read it as a preteen. I never did because it was forbidden. And currently, I'm reading it with my two smartest friends and writing a zine about it. So I'm excited about that, and I will watch the movie after I read it.
Because there is the film from the 80s with Louise Fletcher, and I know they just made a miniseries, Victoria Tennant and Heather Graham.
Yeah.
And I remember, as I think we are of a similar age range, but B.C. Andrew novels were, you were not to touch those.
They forbidden.
Was forbidden literature. And, but I always knew a lot of, maybe, I think a lot of suburban moms had these paperbacks in their house.
All the sort of tough girls that I looked at and admired from afar read it. They all got it from older sisters, and they were the kind of girls who wore lipstick and had older boyfriends and stuff.
This
so
was
I was
before
intrigued.
This was before they dug into D.H. Lawrence?
Right, yeah. Now, I was reading the D.H. Lawrence,
So,
you know, different naughty. let's see. Frankenstein. You know, I love the old Universal Pictures. I think that's terrific. I love the story because a 19-year-old girl bored with her housemates for the weekend invented science fiction.
And
I believe there
is a biopic about Mary Shelley that came out this year.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Neither have I.
There's also that newer version. It was 2015, Victor Frankenstein?
Yeah.
The one with cute little Harry Potter in it? I really liked that.
Really?
I did. I thought it was
a proper
fun
origin story.
Oh, you know, I think that it takes off from the original text. It is not, you know, faithful to the original text, mm-hmm. but I think that it's a good movie. It was not only entertaining and dark and fun, but I felt like it was a fresh look at the story. So, I thought it was a lot of fun.
We don't have feather-haired Kenneth Branagh rolling around in goop.
No, we don't.
With De Niro.
Oh, that was the worst. Garbage.
Then it turns. Then it turns into Cape Fear in the last third.
So bad. I hated that one. The Godfather. Now we could talk all day about The Godfather. So
there's a pregnancy we don't want to talk about in that, and some other things we don't talk about in that
exactly.
one.
Exactly.
But that is another. I mean, that's one from my day of I think a really strong adaptation.
Absolutely.
And still trying to get Emma to watch that. And Gone Girl. I've been meaning to show Dad-Daughter Day with Gone Girl.
Oh, I was
going to
say, is that the one you're going to introduce her to next? That's terrific.
Well, that was not, I mean, it would not be her first Fincher film by any stretch of the imagination.
Good girl.
So, but yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I like that one.
Another example of stuff that's done like every 10 years, Great Expectations,
sure.
The Great Gatsby.
Yeah. Wuthering Heights has been done several times.
There's a lot of those.
Yeah.
Grapes of Wrath. Hello, John Ford.
Yeah.
We enjoyed that. Of course, Handmaid's Tale, which I'm a white guy, and I just haven't gotten around to watching that series yet. And I dig Elizabeth Moss.
Okay. Let's talk about a couple things here.
Oh, boy. Am I in trouble? Or
a little bit.
Oh, geez.
Because I believe that as a white guy who loves women.
You mean the oppressed.
It's
been a rough 2 years.
Sosie.
It's been a rough 2 years for the white male.
Sit down and shut your face, Mr. Sosie. Yes, I know that you're being sarcastic, but you still need to shut it on that.
I have my sarcastic sign.
I believe that, there's actually a sign over his head. I believe that it is your responsibility to read this and to watch this and to understand that this is our reality and that you must help in supporting our mission to avoid this further descent.
God, you're getting 70 cents on the dollar. What more do you want?
All right, I'm going to retread.
I'm kidding, my God.
Only because I love you.
Yes,
only
dear.
Because I love you. Oh, gosh.
How about
it's good.
The adaptation from Heart of Darkness to Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
Not to mention there was also a 90s, I think it was TNT, did Heart of Darkness with Tim Roth and
that.
John Malkovich.
Ooh.
And it's set in and it's the old ivory trade thing. So.
Oh, excellent! Mm-hmm. Well, I love Apocalypse Now. You know, it's a tough watch, but it's really good. And the documentary about
Hearts
the making of,
Darkness,
of it, yes.
One of the best films about filmmaking,
without question. And I'm a big fan of films about filmmaking, particularly when the directors go mad. I have an entire list, and I love them. Island of Lost Souls. What's the
Day for Night? Smaller version of that.
That's so good. Mm-hmm. Yes. So yeah.
Let's see, keep going through here. Jane Eyre is the one they do every 10 years. The Invisible Man, which always gets lumped as a universal horror film, it's a thriller.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a killer. He's a murderer. He just happens to be invisible.
Yeah, yeah.
Not so much a monster. Well, it's that fine line between killer and monster, I guess.
The mad versus the actual monster.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Lord of the Rings is still ending. Let's see. One that I'm really glad made this list, and I really enjoy it, and I actually like both versions for different reasons, but S.E. Hinton's The Outsiders.
Okay, see, I have that on here, too. I love the book. I love the movie. I think it's terrific. I will say, though, that as far as S.E. Hinton adaptations, I do prefer Coppola's Rumblefish.
I do like Rumblefish.
Because he said that it was supposed to be an art movie for kids. And I was a kid. I was a teenager when it came out because I'm 1,000 years old.
Oh, stop.
And I really loved it then. And I rewatched it recently. And it holds up.
What a great double.
Good.
And what a great contrasting double feature. The
Absolutely.
Fact that he made these back-to-back in Tulsa with a lot of the same cast and crew. And one is, I've referred to Coppola as an operatic director.
Yeah.
The Godfathers.
Accurate.
And Apocalypse Now and The Outsiders is definitely. Cotton Club. And they're all operatic stories.
Yes.
And it's glowing and golden because you have to stay gold.
Stay golden, Penny
Boy. That's all there. And then, you have this black and white, almost navel gazing of.
Oh, with
look
the
at
soundtrack by
Stuart Copeland.
Thank you.
And it is a great contrast. And it is the S.E. Hinton novels turn into films that ruined the John Hughes films for me.
Yes.
I could not fully buy in to the suburban fairy tales that
Correct.
Were happening in the mid-'80s. I'm sorry. I don't care if The Breakfast Club's on Criterion.
I wrote a whole zine about that.
Right.
I understand.
And so you have The Outsiders, and then
yes.
A while back they had a video release of The Outsiders, the complete novel, which has the original beginning and the original end and the rock soundtrack, which normally I would like from the era, but I kind of like Carmine's score that goes with it because it's
a cinematic score.
It is a
yeah.
cinematic, epic score,
yeah.
and that I think that complements the film more than music from the era. And
I agree.
The opening scene is when the Sochas chase after Ponyboy at the movies, and then which really happens. Sorry, this happens in real life. Sorry, the end of The Breakfast Club, but when Cherry will not acknowledge him in school.
Absolutely.
Sorry.
That's a great movie, worth a look at. I think it gets forgotten a lot because it's a teen movie. And it doesn't really fit that bill, but definitely check that one out.
Yep. And yeah, just a treasure trove of young up-and-coming actors. Matt Dillon and Leif Garrett were the two big names
right.
in that group at that time.
And yeah, prescient casting because mm-hmm. everybody became Mickey Rourke, little baby Mickey Rourke.
He still had his original face.
Face, yes.
Sorry.
That's all right. I loved his original
you
face.
You were talking earlier, off air, about Rebecca.
Yes. That's one of my favorite books. I reread it every couple of years. Manderley in Flames. The film adaptation, it's Hitchcock, but it's if you've only seen sort of the big Hitchcocks, the psychos of the world,
Nobody, I think, if you were to rattle off Hitchcock films, it would probably make it in the lower
right.
half of maybe the lower teens or upper, the first set, maybe 5 through 10.
But oh my goodness, it is excellent. The acting is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And if you understand a little of the subtext of the time and how they were communicating certain things without being able to communicate them.
See the celluloid closet.
Correct. See the celluloid closet. It's just, it's a terrific movie. And it holds up against not only watching it now with contemporary eyes, but against multiple watchings. It's
mm-hmm.
it's just a joy.
Another thing that's done every 10 years, Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah.
Everybody picks their Darcy. Not your... Never got into Austin?
Well, okay,
you're an old goth lady.
I'm an old goth lady. But I it's a thing I don't like to utter around my book friends because
Uh-oh.
As a lady who reads books, you're supposed to love Jane Austen. And honestly, I don't love it.
Okay.
I find her a bit of a snooze. forgive me. Throw me out of the book ranks, but...
That's right. You'll be the one up against the wall with the cigarette.
That's right. That's your girl.
Yes, dear. To Kill a Mockingbird, one of the great one-hit wonders.
Perfect book, perfect movie.
Yes.
I mean, you can't have any complaints about either of them.
War and Peace, you mentioned Wuthering Heights.
Yeah.
Where the Red Fern Grows, that's another one I think it's always done every 20 or 30 years.
Yeah, kind of classics that get done. The Stand. Now, that is one of my favorite Stephen King books. I think the adaptation that I remember that was like a miniseries was okay, didn't do it justice. My favorite adaptation of a Stephen King is Carrie.
Yeah, yeah. I'm still...
Poor Carrie White.
I will always use the example of The Shining, of being the exception to the rule of, I'm going to just take this and take it over here.
Yeah.
There are always exceptions to it. If you go by the book, literally and figuratively, mm-hmm. or like the Robert Altman school of, the book's a guide.
Yeah.
And, and if you...
It's an inspiration
right.
rather than...
And
yeah.
if you don't believe me, watch Stanley Kubrick's The Shining and then watch the miniseries of The Shining, screenplay by Stephen King. You'll see what I'm talking about.
Absolutely. And the Stanley Hotel in the Kubrick is not the real Stanley Hotel where
mm-hmm.
Stephen King stayed and wrote it. But the one in the miniseries is. And I have stayed there.
Have
and
you?
In that room that doesn't have a room number because everybody always steals it.
Did you check?
Sadly, there were no ghosties or anything.
Nobody in the bathtub?
I really wanted
no
there
twins.
To be like a strange bear and... You know, like
lovely party.
Yes,
no,
they need to be corrected.
Beer.
But I, yeah, no, we can't. But I wanted there to be those things, and there weren't. But it was a lovely hotel.
Did you throw a tennis ball around?
No.
I think they frown on
that,
I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. The neighbors would,
at least. Well, speaking of The Shining, one that's on this list, actually is above it, near the top, is Ready Player One, which the film version, I guess one of the biggest changes, and I've not read it, but I know that they go into a world of a Warner, because really it's kind of a commercial for Warner Brothers. In the book, the group wanders into War Games, but mm-hmm. for the film, because it's Warner Brothers, they're in the Overlook Hotel.
Right.
So actually, that I think that worked out pretty good in their favor.
Yeah, you know, I have to say, I think it's a little bit thin, and I'm a little bit choked with dude nostalgia. Y'all have enough space.
She's pointing at me.
Yeah, no, I just generally speaking,
the oppressed. Yeah.
Mr. Sassy.
So what would be, how would you do a female version of Ready Player One?
Well, I actually,
but you got 8 minutes.
That's all right. No, I can. I wrote about this recently, actually.
And where can people read this?
On my website, www.taffetav.com. And there is a zine on there called Girls on Film. And it was sort of, honestly, I cranked it out as a response to Ready Player One and being choked with dude nostalgia. Not everybody likes the same things. And a lot of times, ladies' stories or other people's stories mm-hmm. get paved over. And so this one was all about my love of certain 80s movies that were influential to me and that I loved deeply but are not talked about. So we have Foxes, which was the first time I had really seen the stories of young women treated with gravitas.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little soft focused. It looks like porn or Pretty Baby.
That's because it's directed by Adrian Lyne.
Adrian Lyne,
who
gave us
Fatal Attraction, yeah. 9.5 Weeks, and the Lolita from the 90s.
But it's very good.
Okay.
It's Cherry Curry and
Jodie Foster,
Sally
Kellerman.
Who's wonderful.
Yep. That's good choice.
It's excellent.
Right.
And see, I watched it a million times. It's unknown to so many people because our stories are paved over with yours.
So, is Times Square on that list?
Times Square,
yay!
That's my movie.
All right.
That one was the biggest deal to me. It introduced me to everything that made me who I am now.
Wow.
Because if we contrast it to earlier movies, it showed a grittier side to things. It showed young women in love. It showed music that I had. You know, I was 10.
DJ by Tim Curry.
Tim Curry. It's that kind of night. It's that kind of feeling. And it introduced me to a lot of things that became very important to me. So that's an enormous one. The movies of John Waters, again, made me feel like I had a place in the world.
Good segue in a moment, by the way.
Excellent. Amy Heckerling's Fast Times was a big one, too, because, again, it was a young woman's story, even though it's written by a dude.
Oh, really? You think the Phoebe Cates slow-mo thing?
That's a dude thing.
Guys are like, I love that scene.
You know, it's a great movie about forthright, strong young woman.
Jennifer Jason Leigh goes through quite a bit in that, folks. Never forget that.
She does. And, you know, if you're watching the TV edits, I will not spoil, but I will simply say, see the theatrical version and you will understand more about what I'm talking about. And those were the movies rather than the John Hughes movies that spoke to me. They're a little darker.
Yeah.
They're a little more grown.
They're grittier.
Yeah, and they're a little more artistic, forgive me.
And the songs won't be played on the radio or MTV 9 times a day.
Yeah, nobody's dressing up and going to fake proms with those songs and things. And the guys who think that they're so nice that they can pursue a woman forever and actually get her don't happen in these movies, so it's delightful.
Hi, Ducky.
Yeah. Although I do like Ducky's fashion sense. I dressed like Ducky for years.
So when there's an organized commercial 80s party, you're that lady.
I am that lady.
Wait, who are you?
Yeah.
And then have to. And
it's true.
Actually, do you carry a DVD copy of Foxes just to bop people on the head with it?
I have a copy of it, and I have a copy of Times Square, which was out of print forever. You don't know what I had to do to get it.
We'll talk later.
Yeah.
All right, good segue. Because,
John Waters?
Yes, because we raise a glass and pay tribute to actor Tab Hunter, who passed away on Sunday at the age of 86. And this is I didn't plan this. This just happened that way. I can't explain it. But the documentary, the really cool documentary about him, Tab Hunter Confidential, from 2015, has been floating around in Netflix for a long time. And Sunday morning, not knowing that he had died, I didn't, because like the world didn't really know until Monday morning. Yeah. I actually sat down and watched Tab Hunter Confidential.
Synchronicity.
And other Police albums. But it's a really... I'm really glad he got to tell his story.
Yeah.
You know, this was he was one of the archetype 50s blonde surfer pretty boy, closeted, and, you know, kind of went through the system and everything that the studio hooked him up with Natalie Wood. He even had his own arrest that got covered over, and, you know, then the parts kind of dried up and he was just working whenever
that
he could.
That studio system, man.
Man, studios.
Yeah.
Studios. Remember, this is the studios that gave Judy Garland pills at a young age and Elizabeth Taylor and Liza Minnelli.
And everybody.
Y'all suck.
They were all just cogs in the machine to make money.
And for us, well, for me, I know, and I'm sure you were, Tab Hunter got a second life.
Absolutely.
In the early 80s, late 70s, because he got to work with John Waters and Divine and Polyester. And he reteamed with Divine again in the Paul Bartel-directed Lust in the Dust, a Western, a film that has Divine and Lainey Kazan as siblings.
Which is oddly wonderful.
It is. It is a.
It's not a John Waters movie.
No, but
it's a fun movie.
It's from the director of Eating Raoul.
Right.
This is his follow up to that. And yeah, he also appeared in Grease too. Whatever. But I mean, it was a cool little resurgence. And in the documentary, you hear Waters talk about this was the first quote unquote movie star I actually had to direct in a film.
Yeah.
And had wonderful chemistry with Divine, and kind of went fearless into the John Waters world.
Really, and if you think about somebody who was pitched as a teen idol so long ago and in that studio system.
Number one song and was
exactly,
in a number of films, Damn Yankees among
diving
others.
Diving into a John Waters world, that's courage and that's lovely and I really enjoyed that.
So you have to check out. It's on, I believe it's Netflix.
I think
so,
yeah.
Tab Hunter Confidential. And then check out Polyester. And if you can find Lust in the Dust, I think that might be out of print
it
as well. But his partner, who was younger and was a studio executive, I mean, fought tooth and nail to get Lust in the Dust made. That is not a film for everybody. And the fact
no.
that it was done in the early 80s when... smaller films were being harder to be made by the studios because they wanted bigger and louder and more money. And so one of these days I'm going to actually write blogs, if I get paid for it, about the smaller films in the blockbuster world, especially those late 70s, early 80s films.
I would read that blog.
Thank you. I'll work on that. So
clicks. See, pay him because he's going to get clicks.
Once more, please plug the website.
My website is www.taffetav.com, and that's TAFFETAV.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, here's some words to live
Silent
by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Moneypenny, always a pleasure to have you in studio.
So lovely to be here.
All right, so go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, Michigan. We'll end out with a little piece of music. You'll understand why.
They say for every boy and girl there's just one love in this whole world, and I know, I found mine. The heavenly touch of your embrace tells me no one could take your place ever in my heart. Young love, first love. Young love, our love, we share with deep.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!